From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 30th day of July 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services. He's in Oakland, Illinois. And later in this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Matt Blaisdell of the Anderson's Climbers Facility in Delphi, Indiana. In today's agricultural news, CRP acres will stay CRP acres, at least until the contracts expire. South Korea is lifting an import tariff on wheat flour, and the Doha Round has come crashing down. Dave Dickey will be along in a moment with these and many more ag news stories. And then we'll continue our conversation from earlier in the week concerning the history of corn. We'll round out this half-hour program, as we do each day, by taking a look at how the weather is affecting growing regions all around the planet. It all happens on the Closing Market Report, where our mission is to arm the farmer with market analysis and weather information. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL, public radio from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Taking a look at the numbers as they settled in Chicago on a Wednesday afternoon. The nearby contract in the wheat, the September futures, at 787.75, down 4.25 this afternoon. December for the soft red at 812.5, down 4 cents. And March futures were down 4 at 835.75. September wheat for the Kansas City hard red at 819.25, down 5.75. Back in Chicago, corn pit, September futures, $6, penny and a half, 7.5 higher for the day. December futures on a settlement at 621.25, up 7.75, and the March at 641.25, up 7.75 as well. May contract in the corn pit, 653.25, 7.75 higher. August soybean futures at 1394, up 9.75. September futures at 1395.5, up 9.25. November, $14.05, up 14 cents for the day. January futures at 1422.75, up 14.5. August soybean meal at 378.60, up $2.10. August bean oil at 58.26, up 43 cents. August live cattle futures, 97.87.5, 32.5 higher. The October at 106.15, up 55. Aug feeders at 112.52.5, up 25. And the August lean hogs at 78.87.5, 85 cents higher on the day. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from the University of Illinois. Here's what the outside markets are doing at this hour. The nearby crude oil futures are trading the September contract $4.51 higher at $126.70. October contract at $127.20, up $4.46. August ethanol futures at $2.45.7, up 2 cents. September futures at $2.45 even, down 9 cents. Natural gas trading the September at $9.22.5, 9.5 cents higher. October futures at $9.31.3, up 8.1. RBOB gasoline, 3.12.5, up 11.7, for the nearby August. September at 3.13.1, up 11.8. August heating oil, that's diesel fuel, 3.51.7, 4 and 4 tenths higher, that is, and the propane trading at $1.75 is unchanged from yesterday. The gold futures are trading the August contract at $902.90 now, down $13.60 an ounce. The U.S. dollar at 73.27 is down 0.03, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 11,478. It's just about 80 points higher on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for this afternoon. Well, actually, I don't have the weather forecast for me this afternoon, or at least in studio with me, so we'll tell you to visit our website. That's WILLAG.org. That's willag.org. Make sure that you listen to some of the podcasts. Check out the MP3 files and our weekend newsletter. You can subscribe to that one on the right-hand side of the page. It's all at WILLAG.org. And if you have not gone out to one of our weeknight panels, you should do that as well. Just check out the schedule at willag.org. You're listening to the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Learned Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products to farmers in East Central Illinois. Learned Seed Service provides customer services and agronomic information to help customers maximize profits. Learned Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Wednesday afternoon. Time to look at the agricultural futures markets. Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, joins us as he does each and every Wednesday. Good afternoon to you, Paul.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me, I heard you talking to Dave Dickey this morning on the air just a bit about the CRP acres and the decision yesterday USDA announced not to release any of those acres ahead of schedule, at least without a penalty that the farmer or the landowner would have to pay. What's your thought on that, and how many acres the United States really might need in order to make the sheets balance for supply and demand next year, corn, soybeans, and wheat?
Yeah. To me, it's one of the big dynamic forces of agri-political management out of Washington that we're going to see. It is going to stabilize corn and soybean and wheat prices to a large extent. Secretary of Agriculture Schaefer is a fine person, and the political winds have spoken. And it's an important statement because I think it definitely puts a floor in prices. It does tell us that we need about 6.8 million acres of additional corn and soybean production next year. The normal withdrawal of CRP acres in 2008 is going to be 1.2 million, 2009, 3.9 million, and a lot of those acres are in the far west and considered wheat acres. In 2010, 4.4. So when we balance the equation, we basically need to bring in 1 million acres of cotton, 2 million acres of soft red winter wheat is going to have to go to corn and soybeans. That means less double crop soybeans, and 3.9 million acres of other fence rows, pasture, plowing up some of that barnyard to make things happen. It's an important statement for a successful farmer in central Illinois on a well-drained Drummer Flanagan soil that times are going to be pretty good on the farm for at least another year to 2 years based on this decision. Is it necessary? Was it the right move or whatever? Well, the political winds will tell that, and it'll be a major decision probably on a new president to make that decision on how he's going to play the agricultural game.
Would you dare to say what the floor for corn and soybeans and wheat might be given the decision not to release the CRP?
Yeah, I asked a question today to an important cash grain trader what the odds of 155 bushel per acre yield on this year's corn crop, because it does look pretty darn good, mm-hmm. The state of Illinois, in some of those dry areas in our mid to southern areas, got a nice rain overnight. What I'm basically saying is I think that, $5.50 to $7 is probably our trading range. I think this does force the end user to be more aggressive, be awake, don't fall asleep, be a strong buyer, a hedger of commodities on a wide basis. And so it does put a major floor into the marketplace. And it does also basically send the message that, maybe Brazil has to squeeze out a few more acres to make things, come together. But it also tells us that we know that Brazil's very aggressive in raising sugar cane for sugar and ethanol. And it also tells us that Mexico likes to raise corn as well. And so it does look like a modest acreage for Brazil and soybeans, but it's not going to be anything that it's going to burden the world market, so to speak.
Well, let's work the end user angle just a bit. You're a livestock producer, hogs or cattle, either one.
He can't afford to fall asleep again like he did this last year.
Yeah. So are you suggesting that anything under $6 is a potential purchase for corn?
I'm guessing if I was sitting in one of those big, cushy offices in the down there as a grain buyer, yes, that's an affirmative. I'd be an aggressive buyer on corn, soybeans. To lock in profitable margins. And you see, the livestock man had opportunities to lock in some pretty cheap grain, too. And, he's had and has been spoiled by not looking forward. But, you know, basically the USDA says, you know, be alert to everybody because it's the function of the procurement manager to be right the market. And the companies that are right the market pay the big dividends and, have good stock value.
So you would be a buyer of soybeans at levels?
The soybean market is a little sluggish right now, Todd, but I think that the soybeans, with the chances of the yield over 42 bushels are seem rather small right now. And, you know, it's also the function of the soybean market to come up with about 4.1 million more acres of soybeans this coming year, and that means the soybeans and corn are going to have to bid for acres. And in any spirited auction, we know that it's usually the course of price rallies instead of price dips.
Okay. Anything else that we ought to add before I let you go?
Well, I think that some of the exodus out of some of the commodity markets, maybe with crude oil up, is a positive factor today. The Merck has also lowered the margin requirements on wheat. So hopefully we are closer to a near-term bottom than one would have thought 10 days ago.
Thank you very much.
Have a profitable day.
You too, Paul. Hey, Paul. Oop, Paul left me, but I know one other thing he didn't mention that he probably meant to, I believe, and I'm not certain this is the case, that he will be the guest for the Champaign County Marketing Club meeting. Probably is Monday night at 7 o'clock at the Champaign County Farm Bureau, which is also the Extension Building out on the west side of town here in Champaign-Urbana. In just a couple moments, Dave Dickey will be here. He'll help us take a complete look at the agricultural news for the afternoon.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
In agricultural news, USDA will not allow landowners to take acres out of the CRP early without penalty. USDA Secretary Ed Schaefer says the agency is comfortable with progress of the 2008 corn and soybean crops despite spring flooding, and he adds land will be coming out of the CRP, penalty or no penalty.
Under the provisions of the 2008 Farm Bill, total acreage in the program is going to drop without any action by USDA. In the 2000 Farm Bill, Congress lowered the cap on the total number of acres allowed in the CRP program from 39.2 million acres to 32 million acres. As a result, the 34.7 million acres now enrolled in the program will have to shrink. And looking out over the next few years, we have 1.1 million CRP acres scheduled to expire on September 30th of this year. That number jumps to 3.8 million acres on September 30th, 2009, and then 4.4 million acres on September 30th, 2010.
Over the past 18 months, producers have paid penalties to pull out early almost 289,000 CRP acres. South Korea says today it plans on dropping its 4.2% import tariff on wheat flour. Earlier, Seoul lifted tariffs on corn, wheat, and soybean meal. The Doha round of world trade talks reached a critical impasse yesterday in Geneva. A major reason given for negotiators walking away from the table is a disagreement between the U.S. and India over steps that developing countries would be permitted to take to temporarily protect their farmers from a surge in imports of competing products. WTO Director General Pascal Lamy says when it comes to the special safeguard mechanism for developing countries, there was no compromise.
I will endeavor to maintain it and to try and guide the membership through these difficult times. But let's be under no illusion about the consequences of the actions of today.
U.S. Trade Representative Susan Schwab says, quote, in the face of a global food price crisis, we simply could not agree to a result that would raise more barriers to world food trade. And USDA is in the final stages of drafting a new federal rule that would allow countries easier access to the U.S. beef market, even those nations with new cases of mad cow disease. The comprehensive rule draws heavily on OIE standards. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming at WILL, public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. You can find those programs and other agricultural programming on our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. And while you're there, don't forget to sign up for our weekend newsletter. It's all about marketing and analysis. It's absolutely free. Just hit subscribe on the right-hand side of the page at willag.org. You know, corn, as we know it today, is a relatively young crop, at least in comparison to the age of the world. And all this week, we're hearing about the history of corn with retired corn breeder Forrest Troyer. Now, Troyer spent 7 years researching and writing about his favorite crop. Today, we'll explore how corn was adapted to growing conditions in the Midwest. In the 1840s, there were about 250 varieties of corn. They originated in Virginia, Tennessee, and Kentucky. As farmers in these states began their movement north and westward into Indiana, Illinois, and Iowa, they brought those crosses with them. 40 years later, in the 1880s, these producers had adapted the 250 varieties to the local conditions in the states across the Midwest. It resulted in 1,000 locally adapted open-pollinated varieties of corn. In 1888, Iowa, for the first time ever, raised more corn than any other state in the Union. The extra 750 varieties of open-pollinated corn, says retired corn breeder Forrest Troyer, were more drought-tolerant and shorter-seasoned than the original 250.
Out of those 1,000 varieties, I don't know the exact number, but there were probably 20 or 30 varieties that were grown much more than the others. One thing that contributed to that was the corn shows.
One of the most popular varieties was called Limming. It was developed about 40 or 50 miles northeast of Cincinnati, Ohio, in Wilmington, and had won a corn show in Paris, France. It was the first widely adapted variety of yellow corn. Half of all the yellow corn grown in the U.S. was at one time Limming corn. It actually represented just one quarter of the total U.S. corn crop, because 50% of the corn grown in the mid-1800s was white dent corn, not yellow dent corn. Well, the next big variety was to become the foundation of almost all of today's hybrid corn. It was called Reed's Yellow Dent. Troyer says Robert Reed developed the variety by accident when he moved from Russellville, Ohio to Delavan, Illinois. In that first year, he planted and saved back seed from a variety called Gordon Hopkins corn. It had been planted late in the season. The following spring, he planted the Gordon Hopkins corn again.
He didn't run a germination test, and he got a field of corn where the stand was too good to tear up, but it wasn't as good as it should be. So he went in and he hand-planted a what they called a common early yellow flint that was grown in the area. And because the early corn was planted later, they crossed. And then over a period of at least 40 years, Robert Reed and then later James Reed selected Reed's Yellow Dent.
It became very popular after winning the corn show at the Chicago Columbian Exposition. Troyer says because of the win, farmers oftentimes called Reed's Yellow Dent World's Fair corn. A Perry Holden, head of the agronomy department at the University of Illinois, evangelized Reed's Yellow Dent, and he convinced the Funk brothers of Bloomington, Illinois, to start producing and selling Reed's Yellow Dent. Holden later took a position at Iowa State University and took 600 bushels of reed yellow dent with him. Troyer says some Iowa seedsmen were not very happy about the introduction of an Illinois corn in their state.
It soon replaced a lot of the varieties that were formerly in Iowa.
Reed yellow dent and livestock feeding trial studies from the University of Wisconsin and Purdue are the major reasons U.S. corn farmers abandoned white corn. By the way, most of the 1,000 original pollinated varieties developed and grown in the Midwest were white corn. The university studies proved pigs grew faster when they ate yellow corn. It was because yellow corn provided a good source of vitamin A, and white corn did not. This one attribute, vitamin A, eliminated the majority of the genetic material farmers and corn breeders would work with to develop hybrid corn in the 1920s and 30s. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from the Archer Daniels Midland Company, ADM, resourceful by nature.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Time now to take a look at the cash grain market. The folks up at the Anderson's Climbers facility in Delphi, Indiana, on the line with us, Matt Blaisdell. Good afternoon to you, Matt.
Good afternoon to you.
You know, I was taking a look at some information that one of the listeners sent to us this afternoon, this morning, on ethanol production and how it's been changing a bit over the last several months as compared to MTBE. But one of the things I made note of, and maybe you can tell me a little bit more about, is that it appears now that ethanol, with the drop in the market, is really starting to be fairly lucrative again for facilities like yours. Is that the case?
It is. I mean, I just know the company, our margins range anywhere with the three plants we have. So, you know, obviously paying different amounts for the corn basis-wise, but anywhere from, you know, the low teens to upwards of almost 20% now. I mean, that same time frame that corn has taken a drop, our DDG price has probably dropped about $20, but ethanol has not quite dropped off as much, or actually has basically stayed steady in that same drop-off. So,
DDGs are running what now?
Our cash price for DDGs is $167 a ton.
$167 a ton. So it's still an awfully good alternative for producers of livestock?
Exactly. With Indiana, it seems like making a pretty big push here in the last couple of years to attract the dairies. That's one of our big local outlets, and then the rest going on rail or up to the container market for export.
Have your purchases of corn at this point mostly dried up as producers wait for fall and higher prices maybe after that?
Exactly. I think most of our purchases now are coming from elevators. We still have some customers who maybe have 5,000 bushels in their bottom of their bins, maybe waiting to see if we're going to get back to the levels that we did here 3 to 4 weeks ago. But with that, we're pretty much dried up. Also, we plan to grind down here at our facility, you know, just getting ready for the harvest time frame.
And your bids for the day?
Our bids in here for corn and the climbers, let's call it $5.67, beans $13.99, and wheat, but the guys still have wheat, $6.18.
All right, thanks much.
Thanks, Doug.
Matt Blaisdell is with the Anderson's Climbers facility located in Delphi, Indiana. Joins us on the Closing Market Report. That one happens each and every Wednesday. In just 2 minutes, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. Drew Lerner, World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City, will be our guest this afternoon.
It's National Cheesecake Day. It's also St. Abdon's Day, patron of barrel makers. The Romans used barrels as early as the 3rd century AD. By the mid-20th century, barrels had largely lost their appeal, except for the aging of spirits, including wine and whiskey. On this day in agricultural history in 1739, Caspar Wiskar founded the first successful large-scale glass factory in the U.S. Much of his trade was with the production of wine bottles. In 1838, it supposedly rained frogs in London. In 1849, Jacob Perkins died. Perkins was issued the first U.S. patent for a refrigerating machine. It used sulfuric ether compression. Perkins also produced the first nails, which were both cut and headed by machine in America. He also patented a hot air furnace. In 1898, cornflakes were invented by William Kellogg, 4 years after he and his brother John Harvey accidentally invented a flaked cereal process based on wheat. In 1906, the brothers founded the Battle Creek Toasted Cornflake Company, which is known today as Kellogg's. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Listening to the Closing Market Report, I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Drew Lerner. He's the Senior Agricultural Meteorologist at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon to you, Drew.
Good afternoon.
Tell me about the weather in the Midwest.
Well, it looks like we're going to have a little taste of summer here. It's going to be a little stressful across the region as we move forward over the next few days. We're going to see showers and thunderstorms that are out there today across parts of the lower Midwest, lower and eastern parts of the region, and those will continue for about 24 to 36 hours additionally, and then we'll find ourselves looking at a drier bias pattern across the region again for a while. And right now it looks like the western Corn Belt is the focal point of attention as we go through the weekend into early next week, with a ridge of high pressure expected to build up across the plains. That will start tomorrow and become most significant Friday through Sunday in the plains, and starting to influence the western Corn Belt when we get into the weekend. We'll be looking at temperatures of 105 to 110 degrees across parts of Nebraska and South Dakota. But in key Corn Belt country, we'll probably see temperatures mostly running in the 90s. I think there'll be a few upper 80s, actually, in Minnesota and Wisconsin. Now, that's all in the western Corn Belt. As we go out further in time into early next week, some of this heat will work its way east of the Mississippi River. I don't think we're going to see any kind of a full-fledged heat wave in the easternmost parts of the region. But we will definitely get into the 90s in parts of Illinois, southern Indiana, Kentucky. And, of course, the Delta is just going to continue to sizzle down there. We have a little bit of a break coming up for tomorrow into Friday morning for the Delta, where we'll see some scattered showers in much of the region. But the rainfall there is not expected to be heavy, just enough to tease farmers and crops a little bit. And then we'll go right back into the hot, dry again, and that region will not see any other meaningful precipitation for almost a week additionally. In the meantime, the heat in the eastern Midwest will only last for a couple of days early next week, and we'll find it all backing out of the region. In fact, the entire eastern half of the country will be greeted by some cooler air from Canada that will set off some shower and thunderstorm activity and bring us some cooler temperatures, all of which will occur starting around midweek next week and continue into the following weekend.
I was reading from the Midwestern Regional Climate Center or the Illinois State Water Survey, one of the two or both, that July was very wet here in Illinois, and that now on record this is the wettest January to July since 1895. So we've had a lot of rainfall.
We certainly have, and actually that has been a part of my study for, believe it or not, frost and freeze predictions coming up here for this autumn. And I went back in time and looked at all those other years where we were wet in the first half of the year, and also when we had a cool bias in the spring. And I found that none of the years that came close to matching this year had an early frost or freeze event, which I found very interesting. There's a lot of other detail to the study I went into. I won't bore you with it, but the bottom line is it looks to me like the northern plains, the northern parts of the Midwest, and a fair amount of Canada's prairie will probably see a little later than usual frost and freeze dates this year. And if that is true, then obviously this crop will be even further helped along, because we are behind in our development in many areas. We do not want to see a normal freeze date, and it looks like we may get our wish in some of these areas with a later arrival of the cold.
Well, Drew, we appreciate you taking the time and for the information on the frost and freeze as well.
All right. Well, you have yourself a good day.
Hey, you too. Drew Lerner is the Senior Agricultural Meteorologist at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, and that is today's Closing Market Report. Please visit our website where you can listen to today's futures analysis, cash grain analysis, and weather on demand anytime you'd like. The address is WILLAG.org. I'm Todd Gleason.